This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and here's a sure sign that spring is actually finally here. Opening day in Cincinnati is just 1 week away. Joining us with her perspectives on how the Reds will do this season are sports writers Hal McCoy with the Dayton Daily News and John Arardi, Cincinnati Reds historian Greg Rhodes, and WVXU reporter and avid baseball fan Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Hal, Greg, John, and Howard, good to have everybody here, be talking to all of you this afternoon, especially with the opening day getting so close. I can't believe it's finally here.
1 week.
Yeah, there are a lot of festivities that go on opening day, Greg, and I think we'll start with those. I wanted to ask you what you thought of Sean Casey.
Oh, they couldn't have picked a better.
They couldn't have picked anybody.
Fact, maybe they can just make that an annual appearance by Sean. Yeah. He can just put that on his calendar. I mean, I'm sure that's going to go over huge with the fans. I mean, everybody's going to be so thrilled to see him out there. He's got such a big personality. It's such a big day and a big event. It was a wonderful selection.
Is it fair to say he's probably one of the most popular Reds players ever?
Well, I think he falls in the category of guys. I mean, Joe Nuxall, certainly. I mean, when you think about guys who captured the hearts of Reds fans for a long time, you have Nuxall, and there's a few others certainly over time, but Sean is right up there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, he really was. I mean, you know, they didn't call him the mayor for nothing. I mean, he was, you know, beloved by the fans.
Yeah, Tony Perez had that title for a while.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, so did Tony. Tony was that kind of guy, too, but Sean had the personality for it.
So how many years is this going to make now for the opening day parade, Greg?
Well, the opening day parade actually goes all the way back to the 1890s. It was sort of in fits and starts. The version that you see today kind of evolved in the 20s. And, of course, originally it was just a small little parade that went from Findlay Market, because Findlay Market, I mean, that's who organizes the parade. It's not called the Findlay Market Parade because of a sponsorship deal or anything. I mean, they organized the parade. And for many years, the parade route was down Findlay Street from the market to Old Crosley Field. And it wasn't until the Reds moved to Riverfront Stadium and on opening day 1971, the parade route was changed out downtown and ends at the ballpark, and that's really one of the things that helped catapult the parade into a big public event and spectacle.
Yeah, is it also fair to say this is pretty unique, the celebration that we have in Cincinnati compared to what other cities are doing? And
yes.
Nothing quite like it anywhere else, is there?
I think we're the only team in all of professional sports to be able to have this kind of a festival, because we open at home every year, and we're the only team that's been awarded that luxury. And so it happens every year. There's all the momentum behind it. It's an annual event. And now we've got, you know, you go to the parade, your parents, if you're from here, your parents might have gone to the parade. Your grandparents, your great-grandparents might have gone to the parade.
I even had the thrill of getting to walk in it. I think, Howard, you've walked in it as well.
That's
a treat when you get a chance to do something like that.
It's a thrill.
Right. Yeah. What time does it start?
Noon.
At noon. Okay. So, and best advice, if you want a good spot for it, is to get down here pretty early that morning.
Oh, yeah. It'll start filling up 10 o'clock in the morning. You'll start seeing people, especially in the sunny spots. The sunny spots will go first. But, there'll be people down there camped out certainly by mid-morning, late morning.
Okay. So let's talk about the team. And Hal, I want to start with you. How do you think the Reds did in the offseason? What did you see as being the key moves they made during the offseason?
Well, yeah, they didn't do a whole lot. No, they're continuing on their rebuilding program. And they did trade Dan Straley, which kind of surprised me, and turned around and brought in veteran Scott Feldman to pitch. But, you know, we all know they're in a rebuilding process, and they've acquired a lot of young prospects over the last couple of years. And that's what we're going to see this year. We're going to see how these young players can play, whether they can play or they can't, and whether they can develop or not. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the starting rotation shakes out. And you could possibly have three rookies in that rotation, and it's going to be a learning process for them. So they may not win a lot of games, but it's going to be very interesting to watch and see how the team develops.
Were you surprised, Hal, by Brandon Phillips being traded?
No, not at all. They wanted to trade him at least 2 years previously, but he invoked his no-trade clause because he wanted to stay and finish his career in Cincinnati. But, you know, the Reds are making these trades, and they got Jose Peraza. They wanted him to play, and so they had to get rid of Brandon to do that. I think the grand plan in the long run is to move Peraza to shortstop, which is his natural position,
right,
and play Dilson Herrera at second base. They got him from the New York Mets in the Jay Bruce deal. So, Brandon was not part of the rebuild, not part of the future. So it was really time for him to go. And I kind of laud him for accepting the trade after turning down two or three others and finally going home to Atlanta to play for the Braves. And he'll get to play there. And probably his time would have been curtailed here in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing for both teams. I mean, it was, nobody loved watching Brandon Phillips play more than I did, mm-hmm. During his years in Cincinnati. But they were coming to an end, and his contract was coming to an end. And Jose Peraza is a guy that has to play every day because this kid, I think,
This is somebody you're pretty high on, Howard. Yeah,
I'm real high on this guy. I think he's going to be a star.
Well, he's having a great spring. He's having a great spring training.
Yeah, he had a great second half.
Yes, the great second half of last year. So, he was somebody that really has to play every day. And you know how bad the Reds wanted to do that, the fact that they traded Brandon Phillips to Atlanta, but they're going to pay $13 million of his $14 million contract. So that's how bad they wanted to make room for Peraza, that they were willing to do that.
Yeah, really, if you think about it, the other reason to watch the Reds besides Joey Votto really is Peraza, and to see if Devin Mesoraco can stay healthy. I mean, to me, when you follow a rebuilding club, you need a lot of upside, and Brandon Phillips did not provide him with that. And I'm very excited to go down there and watch. Actually, Votto hit, and other than that, Mesoraco and Peraza, those are my two big reasons for going to the ballpark this year.
Well, the other thing that, and I think Hamilton too,
if he can stay healthy.
And he has improved as a hitter in the second half of last year. There's no question about that.
To say nothing of watching Bronson Arroyo flip up those little 65-mile-an-hour curveballs.
It's going to be entertaining. But if you look at lineup that starts with Billy Hamilton, Jose Peraza, and Joey Votto, you can score a lot of runs with that. I mean, you can score a lot of runs.
They better score a lot of runs.
Don't forget Zach Cozart.
Cozart. Duvall, if he can repeat, the kind of performance that he had last year.
I know John mentioned Devin Mesoraco, but the team is saying now that he will probably start the year on the DL. But they are very fortunate in having Tucker Barnhart, who I really like a lot. Stepped in there the last 2 years. The pitchers love to throw to him. He's a good defensive catcher, and he threw in enough offense last year. I think he was the top producer with runners in scoring position on the team last year. So he made some good contributions. So, if Devin can't make it right away, they're fortunate that they have Tucker Barnhart.
Well, and Hal, if I understand right, the injuries that Devin Mesoraco had were things that could have been career-ending.
Oh, absolutely. When you have surgery on your hips, and it's on both hips,
And you're a catcher?
Catcher needs his hips. Yeah, your catcher certainly needs the hips. And probably the only other positions Devin could play are designated hitter. He's not going to do that in the National League, or first base. And I think the Reds have a guy over there at first base.
So I hear.
Yeah.
What of Joey Votto? What of Joey Votto?
Oh, I don't worry about Joey Votto. Just put a bat in his hand, send him out there. He'll be fine.
Mark, I can say one thing about Joey Votto is that I always wondered what it was like to get to see Ted Williams play.
Yeah.
Well, in the second half of the last two seasons, we basically
got to see it. Right.
That's how good Ted Williams was. That's how good Joey Votto was.
You match up the numbers, and I mean they're almost identical.
And now, Howard,
I'm old enough, John, that I did see Ted Williams when I was a kid.
Right.
Yeah, I saw him as I was a kid, and I loved him. Although he was always beating up on my Cleveland Indians.
Didn't everybody?
Joey Votto is a disciple of Ted Williams, as we all know, and he's the closest thing I've ever seen to Ted Williams.
Well, Joey Votto is one of the top two or three Reds hitters ever. You know, he's got a 312, 313 career batting average. And, you know, you toss that term around 300 hitter, but realistically, there aren't that many 300 hitters. And the fact that he has maintained that average now for 10 seasons and the fact that, you know, he's number – you don't think of him as a big power guy, but he is number two in club history in slugging percentage, wow, behind just Frank Robinson. And then he's number one in the club roles in on-base percentage. I mean, so when you look at what is it, the components that go into being a great hitter, he's right at the top of the list in every category.
And the one, you know, Greg, the one comment that he made, and Hal can comment on this, the one comment he made a couple of years ago, and I just loved it. He said, I know I could have hit in the middle of the Big Red Machine batting order. In other words, yeah, he studied that.
Right.
And he knows how good he is. He knows how good those guys were, but he knows he's good enough to play with them. And that, to me, is a great ball player because he took note of the history and he's confident as hell that he could have played with that team. And that is one impressive thing to say.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and Hal, go ahead if you wanted to pick up on that.
No, I was just going to say John is absolutely right. Joey Votto could hit anywhere in the order for any team.
Right.
He is just that good. And, you know, you need a walk. You need the ball put in play. You need a sacrifice fly. You need a base hit. Joey's going to do it. He is just amazing with his approach. What amazes him most about me, to me, is when he has two strikes on him and he shortens up the bat a little bit.
Yep. Yep.
And the pitcher can throw four strikes, and if there are pitches that he does not like, he'll foul them off until he gets a pitch that he can drive, and then he'll swing at the pitch to put it in play. Just an absolutely amazing ability to do that.
Yeah, it's amazing to me to watch these teams doing a shift on him because, I mean, this guy can go the other way.
Joey Votto's a hitter.
He can go.
Yeah. Right.
He knows how to put the ball in play. It's not just about hitting it over the fence with Joey.
Well, you know, a lot of guys should adopt his approach. We talked about Frank Robinson earlier. Yeah. I've seen pictures of Frank. He choked up on the bat with two strikes.
You bet.
And that's
one
of the great power hitters of all time. So if Votto and Frank Robinson can do it, I suggest some other guys think about that. Don't be up there swinging from the heels with two strikes balls. You know, go ahead and put it in play.
Just put the ball in play. Good things can happen. But, you know, it's unfortunate that with this team that you've got DeSclafani out to start the season.
Homer Bailey's out as well.
Homer Bailey's out. The only good news about that to me is they really do have some very good young arms. Now, whether or not these kids are ready for major league play, I think they're, you know, just a hair away from being real major league starting pitchers. Amir Garrett is one of the most impressive kids I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a left-hander who could win a whole lot of games for this team. You know, they seem to all have the same hurdle, which is the first inning, getting over the first inning. They go out there, you know, trying to overthrow, trying to strike out everybody, and then suddenly they figure it out. Once they're, you know, they're in a hole, 2-0, 3-0, they figure it out and start throwing strikes.
And the unfortunate thing is by then their pitch count's up to 55.
Right. That's the problem.
Exactly.
Now, and
exactly.
If they can fix that, and to me, with guys like Robert Stevenson, Cody Reed, even Garrett to a certain extent, that's in their heads. They have to fix their heads. If they fix their heads, they'll fix their arms.
Which is one of the reasons why Arroyo being on the staff is kind of interesting.
Thank you.
You know,
well,
I mean,
exactly.
He's not only is he the veteran,
that's right.
I mean, at 40 years old, he's, you know, really approaching geezer status in terms of baseball.
Yeah.
But the fact that Bronson, hopefully, can still get guys out, not throwing 95 miles an hour. I mean, I imagine 85 would be pretty good for Bronson. These guys are going to get a chance.
You think the Reds brought him back to set an example for these younger guys, Greg?
Well, I think his presence in the clubhouse will be significant, and his ability to be an extra bench coach for some of the pitchers will probably be beneficial.
And they don't have to adopt his style of pitching.
No,
they're not going
to
do that.
No. But it's just that whole mentality,
the approach,
setting up the hitters.
Right.
I think Arroyo is a master at that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And he can teach that, and I think he wants to teach that. He has
just
in the past.
Just the fact of having Bronson around for these young pitchers, they will gravitate to him. He will talk about his vast experience and knowledge. And selfishly, I love to have Bronson Arroyo around because he is the most incisive, cliche-free, deep-thinking pitcher that I have ever been associated with. And I know that this goes along with the young pitchers, and that
he's kind of a Joe Morgan.
Pardon me.
I said he's sort of like a Joe Morgan.
Yeah.
In the fact of his ability to be able to analyze the game.
Knowing the game.
Absolutely, no doubt about it.
Hal, don't you think that he had quite an impact on Mike Leake, for example?
No doubt about it. He and Mike Leake were inseparable.
Yeah.
They lockered next to each other. They roomed together. They spent all kinds of time together. Leake had some early problems, and Arroyo helped straighten
him
out.
He helped make him a major league pitcher.
That's just what Arroyo can do for this team.
Yeah, I'd watch Mike Leake and think.
All these young pitchers they're going to have. They're going to struggle. They're going to, as Tom Browning said to me not too long ago, you have to struggle before you can succeed. And these young pitchers are going to struggle, and they need somebody like Bronson Arroyo to tell them, hey, this is how it is, and this is how it's going to happen, and keep your head up and keep throwing.
All right. Yeah, there are times where I'd watch Mike Leake and think, is that Mike Leake or is that Bronson Arroyo? Mm-hmm. I can't quite figure it out if I didn't know better. Relief pitching has been a weak spot for the Reds. John, is there any relief in sight this season for the bullpen?
Well, the interesting thing to me, this just came up the other night in a conversation I had with a couple of guys, is that the Reds bullpen of last year was either the worst of all time or the second worst of all time. And I'm not talking Reds. I'm talking Major League history. So let's put it this way, Mark. It has to be better than last year.
no place to go
but
up.
It will be better than last year.
Yeah, you know, they're talking about having bringing in another left-hander to go with Cingrani. And I know Iglesias is having some elbow problems here in the late spring. And by the way, how do you fall down in a shower? I've never done that in my life. And that's what he claims happened.
Well, it's happened, yes.
I'm sure it's happened, but never happened to me. But I'm not a major league pitcher. But I think the bullpen will be better, Mark. I think it can't help but be better. And what's interesting to me more than anything is that it's going to be pretty much a bullpen by committee. There's not one designated closer. We've got Drew Storen, we've got Iglesias, we've got Lorenzen.
Right.
All with very good arms.
Cingrani
and it's going to be interesting. And you know what I like, Howard, and both Greg and Hal can speak to this, is I think Brian Price, he's smart enough to know with this bullpen and with his many avenues he can go, I think there's a good chance you're going to see him bring in the right guy at the right time, whether it's the sixth, seventh, or eighth inning. He's not going to worry about bringing in his best arm in the ninth. He's going to bring him in when he needs it. And we've seen very little of that in baseball recently. They really have to get back to that. And let's get the outs when they count.
That's right. Absolutely. I agree. And that's what he's been talking about all spring.
Right.
You know, that's the approach that we're going to take with this bullpen.
I think the World Series and the playoffs changed a lot of minds of a lot of baseball people.
You're going
to see more of that, and I'm certain you're going to see more of that on the Reds with Lorenzen and Iglesias and Drew Storen all being interchangeable parts, sort of like the Nasty Boys were back in 1990. Those three guys would do any of three jobs. And,
right.
Can pitch two innings, can pitch three innings, take a couple of days off. I think you're going to see a lot more of that. That would be very beneficial to the Reds bullpen, that's for sure.
So I don't care who gets a save, just so long as somebody gets a save.
Right.
And, you know.
As long as there is a save.
That's right. As long as there's a save
situation
to be had.
Right.
I don't care who gets it.
Right.
Amen. I'll leave that to Brian Price because he knows more about pitching than I do.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's got a possibility it's going to work. And I keep going back to this thing, though. We've got a whole lot of very good young talent out there. We haven't even mentioned Rookie Davis yet, whom I think is going to be a major league pitcher very, very soon.
He's got the name, that's for sure.
He's got the great name. Sal Romano, the same way.
Yeah, it's another good name.
I mean, these are great baseball names, but they're also going to be major league pitchers very, very soon. I mean, the Reds farm system is deep in young arms.
And that's what you would hope. I mean, people complain or not complain, but you have questions about, they don't understand why the Reds had to get rid of guys like Jay Bruce and Todd Frazier and Brandon Phillips and on and on. It seems like you're just decimating the lineup. But it is part of this, as Hal mentioned. I mean, and we've talked about this rebuilding plan the Reds are in. And some of these young guys, you don't know too much about them yet, but in a couple of years, they're going to be household names. They're going to be stars. They're going to be the bobbleheads you're going to go down there and collect at the ballpark. These transitions are always a little painful for fans.
Yeah, but it's very painful for
the fan
fans.
Asks, how long will you be rebuilding?
How many years will it take? That's the issue. There's no guarantee it's going to work either.
That's right. There's no guarantees.
Right.
But, you know, you have to watch these young kids. I mean, last year their first-round draft pick was Nick Senzel out of Clemson. And when he was in
Tennessee,
that's right. And I saw him play in Dayton. And the first time I heard the ball come off of this kid's bat, it made that sound. It made a sound that I've heard with very few hitters over the years. And I said, this kid's got it.
You know, that reminds me.
And he proved it through that season.
Dave Bristol talking about how back in the late 60s, back when he might be walking adjacent to the batting cages down in spring training, and he'd hear the ball coming off the bat, and he wouldn't even have to look. He said, "That's Lee May,
right?
That's the big bopper." So there are every once in a while a kid, and that's what it takes. It takes two or a couple of these guys, like Joey Votto did. Kind of, I mean, Votto had some good years in the minor leagues, but. I mean, he really blossomed. He's become a superstar, and that's what's going to take. If you talk about how fast the rebuilding is going to go, you need a couple of these guys pitching and on the offensive side to really blossom and become a top 10 type player, and that's what makes your rebuilding go, makes it look a lot better.
Right.
Yeah. How can I get you to go out on a limb and get you to – what would be your prediction for this season for the Reds?
I would say if they can win 75 games this year, they're on pace. Got all these young pitchers, you don't know what you're going to get, and like I say, we're in the rebuilding process. It's just going to be just a fun season to see how thing evolves. But if you're looking for great success this year, I mean, teams do catch lightning in a bottle, but this process is going to take a while, so the fans are going to have to be patient. I know they hate to hear that word. But that's what the Reds are all about right now.
And Howard, I'm thinking 82 wins. Am I being too optimistic?
Well, I mean, I think that's possible. I think Hal's probably closer to the mark. I mean, I've been saying 75 and 87 would be a good record for this ball club as it builds towards something even better, which I think they could achieve in as soon as 2018, where they could.
Well, you know, last year, there was a stretch, a fairly long stretch. I mean, it wasn't like they just played well for a week or two, but they had a 6 or 8 week stretch there after the All-Star game where they played as well as anybody in the National League. And that's when they had the bullpen had settled down at that point. Their lineup was more consistent. And I think, I mean, I'm not necessarily looking for them to play 550 or 600 ball this year or anything like that. Especially with these injuries to the pitching staff and the uncertainties in the rotation, but yeah, I think if a whole bunch of things go really really well, a 500 season in and out of the questions. I suspect they are in the 70s somewhere, but it's the arc we're looking at here, and we just the fans need to just be patient. You're going to come on down, enjoy this team, and as John says, there's a lot of things to watch. With Billy Hamilton and Votto and Peraza and some of these young pitchers, and we'll just be patient and hope that next year there's even better things to come.
Hal, Greg, John, and Howard, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Sports writers Hal McCoy with the Dayton Daily News and John Arardi, Cincinnati Reds historian Greg Rhodes, and WVXU reporter and baseball fan Howard Wilkinson.